What's up, Open Floor Globe? I'm your host, Michael the Pod Pina, and I'm joined on the other line by my good friend, Sports Illustrated staff writer Rohan Nadkarni. Rohan, tonight is a big event in our relationship. The Miami Heat and the Boston Celtics are scheduled to play a basketball game. And as someone who takes the high road, win or lose, I wish you luck. But I also know if the Heat lose, there will either be a litany of excuses or you'll tell me you were busy watching Game 6 of the 2012 Eastern Conference Finals on YouTube, or you didn't have time to watch because you were deep into a Nancy Myers rom-com with your dog. So I just want to give you an opportunity to get everything all out of your system right now before we officially start today's show.
Well, first of all, Mike is referencing him texting me the other night, quote-unquote, taking the high road, trying to talk trash about the Heat's triple overtime loss to the Raptors, a night on which, in fact, I was watching It's Complicated with my dog Boba, and pretty soon I will be releasing my official Nancy Myers rankings on Twitter, so Ooh. Stay tuned to that. Beyond that, I mean, listen, the Heat, first place in the East, they're playing with house money, you know? If they win, it's because of the culture. If they lose, it's because they're missing Jimmy, Kyle, and PJ Tucker. I don't see how that's even remotely controversial for a team to be losing 60% of its starting lineup and expected to win on the road. I mean, let me put it this way. This is the kind of game the Celtics should win easily. That, you know, you're at home. You're playing against a team that's playing its third game in four nights.
Rohan, let me stop you right there.
This is the kind of game the Celtics should win by double digits. That's all I'm going to say.
I know, but I just want to say, have you watched the Boston Celtics play basketball this season? There's no game that the Boston Celtics should win. That just doesn't exist anymore.
I don't know, Mike.
I hate to break it to you.
This is all I'm saying is this is the kind of game the Celtics should win easily. So that's...
I agree. I also think, you know, the Heat, you're short-selling everyone else on the Miami Heat, your Heat culture posse. Like, they get up for everything. Except, I will say, Eric Spoelstra, who's a borderline coach of the year, like front runner right now, just an incredible job by him yet again, calling timeout right before Gabe Vincent's three was so epic and legendary and like the worst time possible.
Even like my parents were like watching that game with like a friend's house or something. They came home and like, could you believe the timeout? And I guess there were some people, I didn't think that was a big deal. I mean, even at the moment, like I wasn't upset. I don't know. There was too little time. If it was like he gets the rebound and there's 8 seconds left on the clock, I get it. You know, he pulls down that rebound with like 3-4 seconds left. I think it's in fact like that was a good timeout. I mean, it was unfortunate he hit a crazy shot. I do think a bunch of guys had kind of let up on that play. So I don't know. I saw people being upset about that, but to me, that was like, I don't know, Spo likes to let him play in most situations. I thought it was the right call to take a timeout there.
It surprised me because I was watching it on mute in a hotel down in Florida, of all places. And so I couldn't hear, like, I didn't know that the play was stopped. I thought the game ended, and I was like, oh, my God. And then eventually it caught up to me that
you're really burying the lead here, which is that you were in Florida but couldn't send your podcast co-host a text. Just couldn't give me a heads up that we were separated by only 30 miles instead of literal opposite coasts of the country. But, you know, I guess this podcast relationship means more to me than it does to you. And that's fine. That's okay.
We don't need to go too deeply into this on the show, but I did send you a text of me inside a Publix.
And then I said, like, where are you? Like, there's a few states that have Publix in them. And then I even tried to convince you to order a Publix sub, and you didn't do that either. So I didn't even know what the point of this trip was if you were going to see me or eat a pub sub. I don't understand it.
It's just, you know, life's a mystery, Rohan. That's all it is. Okay. You got to go with the flow. And speaking of going with the flow, we're going to have to move on to today's show, where we have some incredible emails to get to. And before we do, a quick reminder to keep your questions coming to openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. Okay, Rohan, so before we dive into the mailbag, I wanted to have a quick conversation with you about the All-Star starters. And in particular, one All-Star starter, Maple Jordan, Mr. Andrew Wiggins, who was named to his very first team when the starters were announced last Thursday night. I know that we've had a few days to digest this news, everyone has, but we haven't had a chance really to address it on the show. And I think that there are a few fascinating questions to ask that are connected to All-Star itself. I know neither of us had Wiggins as a starter, or I don't think either of us had him on, I know I didn't have him on my Western Conference team. I don't think you did either. I know we talked about him in our last episode, but I don't think you did either. I'm curious, what was your reaction to Wiggins getting the nod? Do you think this is a do you think this is deserved and you're fine with it, or is it closer to a travesty that should have us completely rethink how these teams are selected in the first place?
I don't think it's a travesty. I mean, I certainly don't think he should be a starter. You know, we talked about this on the last pod. I think we both realistically liked DeJounte Murray over him instead of what ended up happening. It's a, you know, the fan voting has also gotten to a point where it's not just about fan voting. It's like, oh, which celebrity did you have tweet out?
Bam Bam.
Yeah.
Is that his name?
It was like a K-pop star or something, right? So, like I said, I know that more people care about All-Star stuff than I do. At the end of the day, it's not a really big deal to me. At the same time, in a situation like this, I'm sure Andrew Wiggins is happy, but that one... You know, I'm sure on some level he's also like, does he feel like it's earned to be a starter? I'm curious how he feels about it deep down. So I wouldn't say, you know, I stopped sort of saying certainly that it's a travesty or that I'm upset about it, etc. But yeah,
I'm being fresh when I say travesty. Yeah. Obviously, it's not a travesty. It's just an All-Star selection. I will say that when I saw his face, his body image flash across the screen when they were announcing the starters on TNT, my initial reaction was I thought it was a joke. Like I'm not gonna lie about that. I was completely expecting Rudy Gobert first and foremost, and then. Like Kat, maybe. Like I voted for Kat. I thought he had a possible chance. Draymond. There were just like, I don't know. I knew that Wiggins was way up there in the fan vote. I assumed that players would not vote for him. I assumed that media members, like there were media members actually who voted for Andrew Wiggins. And I think this kind of brings me to like my next question, which is just kind of a bigger picture one about All-Star selection in the first place, which you touched upon. Right now, it's 50% fans for starters. It's 50% fans, 25% media, 25% players, and then coaches pick the reserves. Now, I know that you previously addressed this, but as someone who lives and dies by who does and doesn't make the All-Star team, like what changes would you make to this system, if any, after Andrew Wiggins is suddenly starting because of what we just saw here?
I just don't know that you can make changes. I mean, they tried to make changes, and I think for the most part, the right guys make the team. I don't think there's been, since they switched to the current system, there are no egregious snubs that come to mind, at least for me, someone who doesn't care that much. But, no one comes to mind as like, oh, this guy, can't believe he made it this year. You know, there are certain players, frankly, who I like when they're in the All-Star game, and if they're not having a quote-unquote All-Star season or getting it on name recognition, etc. Mm-hmm. But short of taking some of the vote out of the fans' hands, which I think is just kind of goes against the spirit of what the Enterprise is, I don't know what changes you want to make. And I understand why people are like sick of the idea of we should make it all media. I think the real thing you have
do players
to
do. Need to vote, honestly? Like, they I did mean, not I, take yeah, it seriously.
I don't think the players need to vote. Or just they need to remove the importance of the All-Star game entirely as it relates to contracts or maybe even, you know, Hall of Fame, whatever. I mean, not that I think it's ever been the biggest deal, but perhaps the more important thing is to remove the importance of it from these other measuring sticks that we use or other indicators, you know, and I think that would make it easier when someone maybe gets into the game that people are a little bit dubious about. So that I think is a better fix, is let's just stop talking about all-stars when it comes to Hall of Fame cases or contracts, etc.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that would be kind of sad to me. Like, I think, like, this is why I don't want the all-star game and the all-star teams to be stretched out to 15 guys, because, like, it should be an honor. It should be a select few. And that just, like, brings more gravitas to the actual event. And I love watching the actual game, even though a lot of people, you know, bitch and moan constantly on Twitter throughout the four quarters. Like, I don't care. I think it's fun. It's awesome to see these guys throw lobs to each other and stuff. But if you were, let's just say, like, if you were on the Phoenix Suns and you were more specifically in the Phoenix Suns backcourt and you saw that Andrew Wiggins was starting on the All-Star team, and you're Chris Paul or you're Devin Booker, your team is just, like, basically unbeatable right now. You're winning. We're recording this on a Monday. You've won 10 in a row. You have the best record in the NBA. You're the best team in the NBA. And both of you are way better than Andrew Wiggins is at basketball. And that just brings me to, like, should we, is it time that we, like, get away from positions altogether? Like, is it time, because of something like this happening, just as a way to prevent it in the future?
That is an idea that I think I could get behind. You know, I know that when we were coming up with our reserves, it was also kind of frustrating to come up with, we need three front court, etc. I mean, if we're going to do that, I really think it's probably time to just do away with both conferences and positions and just get the best 24 NBA players on the floor and let them go at it. Mm-hmm. I like that idea of a fix, because especially now with the new format, I'm not the first person to make this point, the conference distinction really doesn't matter or make sense. You know, it's not like MLB or whatever, they're even playing under different rules or something like that. So I could get behind getting rid of conferences and positions, especially positions, because it's just an artificial construct that is honestly getting more and more irrelevant today's game, you know, each passing season.
Well, and I got to be honest, I expected a little bit more disgruntlement out of you about Wiggins making the team, but you seem like okay with it. You're fine. I know that All-Star isn't like your be all end all, but
I mean, it also is like, it's also just like, it is what it is. It's done. It's a done deal. Like, there's nothing to do about it. You know, the fans did what they had to do to get him in as a starter, and that's that. Like, am I going to argue against the will of the people? You know, Mike, are you going to be one of those people that's questioning the validity of elections? No, in all seriousness, it's a bummer, but then you're also like, there's a limit to which I'm willing to go, because Andrew Wiggins didn't do anything wrong, and I don't want to put down Andrew Wiggins because of what is ultimately an imperfect system, and there's no great solution for it. And I'm not going to trash Andrew Wiggins' game. He's obviously had a nice season. Yeah, it's like, there's just nothing to gain to be upset about at this point. Like, I think we could definitely talk about fixes, and I think what you mentioned is good. But the bigger thing is, I don't want to dump on Wiggins, who's, you know, to some degree being put in a little bit of a strange position. But
I agree.
You know, that's kind of the reason for my, I guess, you know, lack of passion about the topic. But, you know, I just think that it's also a little bit frustrating, because the power has been in the NBA's hands to a degree to kind of stop these things from happening, right? Like, they could go positionless, they could go conference-less. For whatever reason, they're married to tradition when it comes to the All-Star game, but are willing to do all kinds of stuff when it comes to the regular season. So that the dissonance there is a little strange to me. But, yeah, I just look at, you know, I guess ultimately the NBA is like, this is a quote-unquote small price to pay for, you know, maintaining the normalcy of our game or whatever it may be.
Yeah, I think that there's obviously the fear if you go positionless that, you know, someone like Jared Allen would have a 0.0% chance of ever making it. And this year he has a pretty strong case because of, like, front court players have to make it. But I don't know. I feel like if you changed a little bit of, you know, the voting process and who gets to pick and it wasn't just K-pop fans, that faith in people who are actually watching the games and who understand that Jared Allen's very good and deserving of an all-star appearance this season. So
what if
what
if you let the fans vote, but the media comes up with the list of players who are eligible?
Oh, wow. Interesting. Did you just think of that all by yourself, Rohan?
It's possible. Every now and then I'm good for a hashtag hoop idea, you know?
I like that idea. We're going to have to revisit it in the future. That's brilliant. And no, that's really good. And shout out to you for coming up with that off the seat of your pants. Okay. Do you have anything else to say about Andrew Wiggins or All-Star, or can we move on? Because this email, I'm like chomping at the bit to get to. It's one of my
all-time favorites. Let's do it. He's literally rubbing his hands together.
I know.
In excitement for this next email. Yeah, let's hear it.
I had to get the lotion out. Yeah. Okay, so this email comes in from Alex, who writes, "Hi, Michael, Rohan, and Brother Herring." I love how Brother Herring is catching on.
Yeah, good
this
for Brother
amazing.
Herring. I haven't heard from him since he spoke to Spike Lee. He doesn't respond to anything in the group chat anymore.
Yeah, I know. He's big-timing us.
Yeah.
Dame Dash. My name is Alex, and I'm from Wichita, Kansas. I have been a longtime listener and fan. I don't think I have missed an episode in a couple of years.
Wow.
Shout out to you, Alex.
Thank you, Alex.
All I seem to hear from the media is praise for Joel Embiid and how he has put the 76ers on his back and is, quote, leading the MVP race. I just can't help but ask a question. Why is everyone seemingly pretending that Nikola Jokic is not doing what he is doing on a nightly basis? Jokic leads Embiid in every per 36 category aside from turnovers, with an almost negligible difference in points. Not to mention, if you pull up advanced stats, it is ludicrous how many categories Jokic leads in. I understand that Jokic is not the, quote, sexiest player. And from a marketing standpoint, he probably isn't the best choice to label as the face of the NBA. But when you look at the numbers, he is almost undoubtedly the best player in the world, not to mention the fact that the Nuggets have rattled off 8 of their last 10 and are sitting in 4th place in the Western Conference. Why is everyone just ignoring what Jokic is doing without 2 of the 3 best players on his team? In my eyes, Jokic is running away with MVP, and I'm not trying to downplay the season. Embiid is having it all, but he is simply just not the better player. All the best, Alex. So I just want to say off the top, like, every so often we get an email here at Open Floor that turns me into the Antonio Banderas gif from the movie Assassins, where he's leaning back and exhaling after he takes a glance at the laptop. That was me after I read this, because okay. I was on a text.
A born Sixers hater. You were literally
this
born.
Has nothing to do with that.
Came out of this the womb. You were like Dr. Not- J traveled on that layup.
This has nothing to do with that, but I will say that I have noticed this this wave of Joel Embiid is the MVP from certain media members and the narrative that is forming. And I'm just like, this is very annoying stuff. Like, I'm sorry. Like, every time I see a box score of Embiid's that is posited as the reason why he is the MVP or their team's record or the on-offs or anything, I just look over at Jokic, and his box scores that night was better. His team won by more points. Like, it's just, I can go on and on into it, but like, what are your thoughts about, I'll throw it to you before I rattle off even more points about why this upsets me, but like, what are your thoughts about the Joel Embiid Jokic MVP race? And is it a two-person race for you, or are there more players involved?
Well, I will say, in a macro sense, Embiid versus Jokic is truly one of the great basketball questions of our time. And I mean that genuinely. I think I brought it up on this podcast earlier, but don't you want to see what happens if they switch places for a week? Like, give them each 10 games with the other's team and see what happens? That would be a fascinating experiment. I have no idea how it would go. I do think it's... Listen, I picked Jokic as my midseason MVP. Alex, if you're looking for, you know, quote-unquote media members or national media guys who are, you know, conducting the Jokic train, that's me, all right? We're Chris Pine and Denzel Washington. We're unstoppable, baby, all right? That train is rolling down the tracks. And I made my case. I believe he's still in the 100th percentile, according to Cleaning the Glass, in on-off differential. The Nuggets play like one of the best teams in the NBA. When Jokic is on the floor, they're one of the worst teams of the century when he's off the floor. He's made a massive impact. At the same time, I think Embiid's gaining ground. I don't think there's any... How can you deny that he's at least put himself in the race? I think it's fair to say Durant's almost certainly not winning MVP anymore. Steph is close to Jokic in terms of impact on-off numbers. There's no doubting what Steph means when he's on the floor. I believe I wrote this recently. The threat of his shot probably means more than whether or not his actual shots are going in or not. That's how...
Which is good news for the Warriors, because they're not really going anywhere.
Which is terrifying for defenses. At the same time, I just think that the shooting dip, I just think it's ultimately going to hurt Curry in terms of MVP.
Mm-hmm.
So I do think Embiid is in the race. You make it sound like it's almost not close. I think it's close. And there's just a lot of season left. I mean, I had Jokic as my midseason MVP, but I do think it's an interesting race right now. And it's more so an interesting question of Embiid. I think obviously at the moment is scoring in a more exciting way, at least. The mid-range, you wrote about his mid-range last year, Mike. I haven't looked at the numbers anecdotally, at least. Like, I just think he's shooting the hell out of the ball a lot more, a lot better than he was at the start of the season, and that's helped in terms of some of his scoring uptick. But it's hard to separate those guys. It really is, because we will never know what they would do if they trade places.
So I will admit, of course, that Embiid scoring in the last 15 games, I mean, he's averaging 34, shooting 54% from the floor. Like, that is...
I mean, it's nuts. It's nuts what he's doing.
It's insane. It's insane stuff.
And there's a thing about Embiid that when you watch him, and this isn't to take anything away from Jokic, who's obviously incredibly effective as a scorer, and I think for a long time had the best effective field goal percentage in the league, or he's been high up there all year long, especially in terms of people who take as many shots a game as he does. There's just a certain dominance to the way Embiid plays sometimes, and we don't have to get into, everyone knows how I feel about whether or not they should trade Simmons, but I think you can... I feel like Nuggets fans are going to get mad at me for this, even though I picked Jokic as the MVP and he stole my MVP. I think you can more credibly guard Jokic one-on-one than you can Embiid. I just don't think there's anybody in the league who can guard Embiid. I don't.
So, first of all, that's an interesting way to paint it.
I think that is not to say that that's why Embiid should be the MVP, but I think that's like... When you watch him, I think that's why he gets that maybe extra bump that Jokic doesn't get. There's a brutishness to some of Jokic's scoring, not his overall game, that I think people are just, they don't know what to do with.
So, first of all, I just want to say that I think Embiid is amazing. I think that he would be second if I had to vote right now. I agree with you that there is a lot of more basketball to be played. Embiid could easily shoot ahead. If he continues to average 34 and 12 and out when he's on the floor, his team is plus 8 or whatever it is, then it's going to be really difficult, especially if the Sixers finish with the first the top seed in the East. He's just going to win the award because the Nuggets aren't going to finish in the top two in the West because of where the Warriors and the Suns are. And people look at winning. A lot of voters look at winning and they value that a lot. I will say it's really interesting for you to bring that point up, that specific point up about Embiid being unstoppable one-on-one, which he is, no doubt about it. The Milwaukee Bucks played the Denver Nuggets last night, Sunday night. The Nuggets won in a blowout. And after the game, Giannis Antetokounmpo and Drew Holiday both were upset about Mike Budenholzer's defensive strategy against Jokic because they were showing help every single time Jokic touched the ball. They would double, they would shade over, they would pre-rotate. And Jokic was just picking them apart. Like, that's what he does. He loves passing. He loves finding open cutters, open shooters. And the Nuggets shot like 53% from behind the three-point line and ended up winning by a very large margin. And Jokic didn't even have to score. And after the game, Giannis was like, I wish that we guarded this guy straight up, one-on-one. And the reason that they didn't is because Jokic would obliterate Bobby Portis one-on-one. Like, he would score 55 points if that was the defensive strategy, and the Nuggets still would have won by probably a lot of points. So I get what you're saying about Embiid and him being unstoppable, and I just, like, and I don't think you're discrediting Jokic, but Jokic is truly unstoppable in the post and in a different type of way, viscerally,
yes,
and aesthetically.
Yes,
but he is also unstoppable.
Yes, that's a good way to put it. They're both unstoppable. I think Embiid just somehow does it in a way that resonates more with people. Like, I think that we as a society we live in a society that is still quite not ready to know what to do with Nikola Jokic.
It's true. We don't.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just talking about even just from like a pure, if you take skill out of it, just like a pure size thing, I think that is what somehow that at least tricks people into thinking, let's stick to one guy on Jokic. But
who do you think is better? Who do you think is just a better basketball player?
Oh my God.
Like, to me, it's not even that, it's not that hard to answer, but like,
I think it's hard to answer because, but here's what I'd say. Jokic has been really good defending the rim this season, although I still think it has more to do with his like verticality and body placement. I still think in a vacuum, Embiid has a significant advantage on Jokic defensively.
I think that I think Embiid is a better defender, a more feared defender. I think that the way Jokic is asked to defend in Denver's system is a lot different for sure. I also think that Embiid, he doesn't really bring it on every possession. And I'm not saying Jokic does because he doesn't, but
yeah,
Embiid, there's plays where like Embiid is usually dropping, right? And sometimes he gets out there and he moves his feet really fast. And in those instances, you're like, this guy should win every single Defensive Player of the Year award. But when he's in deep drop, it's just like, I know what the strategy is. And I know that the numbers say that they do force a lot more mid-range shots and they do deter shots at the rim, et cetera. But like in certain matchups, sometimes like a guard coming off a screen will just hit like three straight jumpers in a row. And you're just like, Embiid, can you kind of do something? And that's a little frustrating when you watch them play. But I hear you. I think Embiid is a better defender. I think what really frustrates me though, is even going back to last year when Jokic won, the whole argument was like, Embiid would have won had he played more games. And now we're seeing that the games are, you know, Jokic has played 44, Embiid has played 38. Embiid is also not playing tonight against the Memphis Grizzlies because of scheduled rest, which is very frustrating because the Grizzlies are like one of the best teams, and I would love to see that matchup.
Also, I would just like to say Jokic played every single game last season coming out of the bubble.
Yeah, wild.
Incredible feat, like, truly one of the greatest feats of this decade.
Yes. So, I mean, real quick, I just want to I said I would go back to this, but you mentioned the on-offs, and I want to sit on this question for a while because I it's really been bothering me, as you can tell. But Jokic, as you said, he leads the league in on-off differential, plus 22.2. The next highest is George Hill at plus 18.3. Joel Embiid ranks 21st at plus 10.8. Steph Curry is 11th at plus 12.6. Jokic is plus 22.2. Like it's just, it is, I know on-off isn't everything, and if you want to go through every other statistical like measurement we can, and Jokic will be better, but like that right there to me is like, it's called most valuable player.
Yeah, that's
just what it's called.
That's how I convinced Herring when we were doing our midseason awards pod. You throw out that number, and I mean it. I meant it genuinely. They have a net rating with Jokic on the floor that would be, I believe, the best in the NBA. I mean, obviously, the Warriors like have a great net rating when Steph is on the floor. You know, there's reasons for that, etc. But they play like the Suns or the Warriors when Jokic is on the floor, and they are truly one of the worst teams of the millennium when Jokic isn't playing. It's that stark of a difference. But, I mean, in terms of who's a better player, I really, really, really struggle with that one. I say that as, like, Sun, who I genuinely believe has been one of the biggest Jokic cheerleaders in the media for the last 3 or 4 years. That is still a tough one for me, and I'm not going to answer it. I'm going to
One number that is really interesting to me is 2-point field goal percentage, because we talk about Embiid being unstoppable. He should be. I know he takes a lot of mid-range jumpers, and that's part of his game. He doesn't need to do that. He could post up on every possession if he wanted. But his 2-point percentage this season is 52.8, which is whatever. Like, a lot of his efficiency comes from the free throw line, drawing fouls, making free throws. He's a really good free throw shooter. 52.8 on 2-point shots. Jokic is 63.7 on 2-point shots. And it's not like he takes 13.2 per game, and Embiid takes 15.4. So like that discrepancy right there in just one stat. And again, I could go to so many different statistics, but that right there is just another sign of just a big man who like gets to his spots and makes his shots and is truly unstoppable. And the number one separator for me is passing. And one of the narratives that comes up here is like, Embiid is the point guard. He's playing point guard for the Sixers. This is incredible. And yeah, his playmaking is for sure improved. No doubt about it. Some of the plays he makes,
he will never be on Jokic's level as a playmaker. It's not close.
No. That's so right there. That's just another humongous differentiator. And one guy really makes everyone around him look like a legitimate all-star. And the other guy, not that he doesn't do that for certain teammates, for sure. I think he makes his teammates better, as all superstars do, but not to the level that Jokic does. And lastly, before we move on, I want to just mention the standings, as I did earlier. Denver is, I believe, okay, so I said that they were fourth before. They're actually fifth as of right now, but have the same amount of losses as the Utah Jazz. By the way, get better, Joe Ingles. This is like the worst. That's some of the worst news of all time.
Injury in the contract year. Can we talk about, our power rankings, sorry to derail this, because our power rankings come out on Mondays, and we vote as a staff. Utah sliding, man. I believe they lost five in a row, four in a row now.
2-8 in their last 10, I believe.
Utah,
it's tough. I mean, they don't have Gobert, and they don't have Donovan Mitchell. It's not the Utah Jazz.
But I mean, it sounds silly, but it's just going to be the brackets in both conferences are going to be interesting. The East. I sent you this text. I don't remember if it was last night, but the seeding in the East is going to lead to some really crazy stuff. I mean, those top six teams are separated so closely. I think there's like a two-game difference between...
Yeah, Brooklyn is a six seed right now.
That's wild. Some team is going to end up with the one seed and is going to regret it because they're going to get Brooklyn or Milwaukee in the second round or something insane and be like, you know, how did this happen?
Yeah, the seedings are crazy. Real quick, I just want to finish my point and then we Please. Can touch back on that if you want. But so Denver is 28-21 and Philly is 30-19. So Philadelphia is two up in the loss column. And I just like don't even like when we talk about again, like if Philadelphia finishes first, which is possible, they could, but Denver could also have the same record and be like fourth or third or whatever in the West. And so I don't know. I just think it's really dumb. I think Jokic is an easy choice as the MVP. And there are a few like NBA.com's official MVP ladder that Michael Wright does an excellent job on. I think Jokic is still number one there. So shout out to him and shout out to that placement. But like, I do just, I like this email from Alex because it was addressing something that was on my mind that I actually wanted to talk about and was timely and so wonderful. And I think I hope I didn't spend too much time.
No, I think, listen, Alex,
blurring on about it.
We're with you, man. Let me put it this way. Let me put a bow on it. Embiid's not a shoe-in for MVP. There's a lot of season left, but we will certainly be pushing the Jokic narrative as long as we're hosting this podcast.
Always.
Unless something changes, but for now, I think we both have Jokic as our MVP.
I know. Marcus Smart just playing with glass in his hand. He's like plus 100 in the last three games. We'll see what happens tonight. Okay, let's move on to this email from Jonathan, which you'll really love, Rohan, and I also loved it. Jonathan writes, "Hey, Michael, Chris, Rohan, and Shelby. Love the pod. My question is, if you take the best player off of each NBA team, who wins the finals, and why is it the Miami Heat?" From Jonathan, who says, "P.S. need more Shelby." I agree. Shelby is the greatest.
We all need more Shelby. Shelby doesn't want to be our friend, though. So there's only so much we can do about it.
Okay, so Jonathan is clearly in favor of the Miami Heat as the winner of the finals. If you remove, first of all, who's the best player? It's Jimmy, right?
We have to go with Jimmy. Yeah, yeah.
Okay, yeah. You know what? Like, I tried to overthink this. I think Miami is the answer. Like, I'm not going to get too complicated. I mean, they've been so terrific regardless of who's on the floor. They've, you know, that team would have Kyle Lowry, it would have Bam Adebayo, it would have three-point shooting, Tyler Hero off the bench, maybe he starts. It's just they're a ridiculously loaded basketball team that might win the NBA championship. I have a few other teams, though, that I wanted to shout out that I think could be interesting. And this was actually a really difficult exercise because I started plucking like best players off of teams, and I was like, oh, that team stinks now. The Toronto Raptors. First of all, I'm not even I think it's Van Vliet, and then it's like, okay, they've been really bad when Van Vliet's not been on the floor and they can't win. But I look at the names and the players and I'm just like, okay, they still have OG, they still have Pascal. Yeah. So I like them. I'm always just gonna ride or die with the Clippers and this exercise, we're taking Kawhi off of the team. So we're assuming we have healthy Paul George. Like, yeah, let's ride. Like, they're very good. I love them.
I think the Clippers are my favorite for this exercise.
Oh, over the Heat?
I don't want to step on the question, but let me know when I can give my official Miami Heat take for the 2022 season.
Do you want to just give it right now?
If you have more teams you want to name, you should name those teams.
Okay, this is going to be like a 45-minute diatribe. Okay. You know, here's the kind of a sleeper pick. The Atlanta Hawks. You take Trae Young off the team.
And remove and all I love the bad vibes.
I love
Cam Reddish.
I love Trae Young.
Cam Reddish gets a trade back.
I love Trae Young. I think he's great. This roster is just so deep. Like, and you look at Onyeka Okongwu the other night in the game against the Lakers where he has like six dunks in the fourth quarter.
Can we discuss how well my 2019 redraft take of DeAndre Hunter has aged. When I took him, I think third or fourth in that draft.
Sure. I love DeAndre Hunter. Yes.
Yes.
You're preaching to the choir here.
Yeah.
Love him.
The Hawks are a good pick. I like DeAndre a lot. I like John Collins a lot. It's weird that it sounds like John Collins back on the trade block, like forever. They've won seven in a row now. Shout out to Kyle Goode, the struggling Hawks, poor guy. Sorry, Kyle. So maybe they do end up standing pat. I don't know. They're in a weird position because it looked like they were ready to blow it up. Now they're playing well enough that do you believe in the stretch? I don't know. I don't envy Travis Schlenk. That's a tough decision for that he's going to have to make because I still don't know. The chemistry on that team still does not seem to be the best.
Okay, one more team, and then you can talk about the Heat, okay?
Thank you.
The Phoenix Suns. And
do you think I don't Chris know Paul? Who we're...
So I was going to ask. I don't know who we take off. Is it Booker? Is it?
If they take off Booker, I think they can still win. If they take off Chris Paul, I do not think they can.
So if you take off Chris Paul, and if granted,
if they put you at center and Chris Paul was in the lineup, you would get 8-6. You would pick up 8 points and 6 boards. And
I would miss my first layup, and then I would get a text at halftime that was like, "Your family has been kidnapped," and it would be from Chris Paul, and he'd be staring at me.
He'd be like, "We have men outside your family's homes."
Look, in this exercise, we're going to be removing obviously the best players from every team. So I do think if you had campaign. Booker, Bridges, Crowder, Ayton, like that's tough. You're not buying it?
Listen, we've seen the Suns without Chris Paul, and they were a nice bubble story, but I don't know, man. Give me the point guard. Give me CP3. They need him. I like their chances. And that's not to say Booker's not become an outstanding player, and he was.
Mm-hmm.
He's unfortunately going to have one of those forgotten finals because he was great in that series. But I think Chris Paul is their most impactful player still, and I think that they'd have a better chance without Booker than they would without Paul.
Okay, so you like the Suns then for this exercise? That was a good pick. You like that?
Well,
if we take Booker off,
then yes. But I don't think he's their best player. Is my point.
Fair enough. Okay, so I'll let you now talk about the Heat. I hope all of this is irrelevant by tomorrow.
Well, no, Chris. Here's the thing. Listen, they have been one of the more interesting stories in the league. They're first in the conference as of this recording. They've won a ton of games without their best guys. Kyle Lowry, it looked like just when Bam Adebayo was coming back, after missing all that time with the torn thumb, it looks like they're finally going to have Kyle, Jimmy, and Bam together. They still have not played together since the end of November. They've only played 14 games together. It's like, okay, they're going to hit the ground running. Let's see what they got. Lowry's now missed time due to personal reasons. He's still away from the team. Jimmy Butler's out tonight. I think there was the conventional wisdom about this team headed into the season was they're going to be just kind of get through the regular season and they're going to be a tough out in the playoffs just because of their defense, their coaching, etc. I'm a little worried they've become the regular season smoke and mirrors team. That's my take.
Oh.
Yeah.
Why do you think that?
They rely a lot on three-point shooting from guys like Gabe Vincent, Max Strus, Hero Robinson. And we've seen those types of teams, to an extent, mitigated a little bit in the playoffs, whether it's teams like the Jazz or the Clippers. And that's kind of when they need their stars to step up. And this all comes down to Jimmy Butler, who I think for parts of the season, early start of the season, was playing like one of the best players in the league, but I just think their late game half court offense, I do not know how it's going to hold up in a playoff series. And you look at all the other great teams in the East, whether it's Giannis, with the Bucks with Giannis, the Sixers with Embiid, the Nets with Durant and Harden or Irving, I just am nervous that the Heat don't have a half-court scorer who's going to be able to get them over the hump in the playoffs. So that's my official Miami Heat take. Yeah, I know. It's a little bit surprising.
I'm stunned.
But yeah, but I'm a little bit worried that they're the smoke and mirrors regular season team. And you look at a lot of the games they've won without Jimmy, Kyle, etc. They've just had insane three-point shooting, which is a credit to those guys. They've made the shots. I also think they're in a weird position. I think Jimmy Butler, they're a positive with Jimmy Butler on the floor, but I think they've been even better with him off the floor this year. That might have changed up until recently, but that was true through like the end of December, which is it goes to show how crazy their offense was in that stretch when he wasn't playing. So, yeah, that's just my that's me throwing a little hesitation on the Heat, but their late game offense, which I think is the most kind of analogous to what a half court offense looks like in the playoffs. I'm a little bit worried about them being able to score in those situations.
So Miami's crunch time offense, do you know where it ranks, Rohan?
It's got to be close to the bottom, if not dead last.
It is 27th.
Yeah.
Right behind the Detroit Pistons, which they're a full point per 100 possessions worse than the Detroit Pistons on offense in crunch time. I personally have faith in Jimmy in those ISO situations. I think that you'll see a lot of, you know, basic pick and roll with him and Bam, spread the floor. You'll see a lot of Kyle Lowry, Bam, pick and roll, spread the floor. And I guess like the question for me that, I love their theoretical closing five that really hasn't played a second. They have played a second, but not a lot of time this season, which is Jimmy, Bam, Kyle, PJ, and Tyler Hero.
Yeah,
I like that unit.
They've played very little together, and it hasn't played.
Yeah,
yeah. They played like they blew a couple leads against the Jazz, ironically. So their lineup stats are really skewed by those. But yes, you're right. It's barely played.
And I like that lineup. I think that lineup is really potent, can be potent. I want to see it. And I think that there's considerable, or maybe not considerable, I think that the worry about Tyler Hero's defense because of what we saw in the playoffs in 2020 is a little overblown. I think he'll be fine. He'll be targeted maybe, but Lowry's on the floor now. Bam's better. Jimmy's Jimmy. PJ Tucker was not on the team in 2020, et cetera. Like, I just think there's a lot of, you can insulate him, insulate one poor defender and be fine. And he'll make up for it on the offensive end with everything he provides there. So I want to see that lineup. I think that is kind of like a trump card for them. And I'm not worried about them in the playoffs. I think that they're so smart in getting through the regular season, how they do, because they have the best coach in basketball. And they're so plug and play. But when it comes down to it, like, they have enough talent. And maybe I'm totally wrong here. And maybe you're right. You watch more Heat basketball than I do, but I have faith in Jimmy. I think last year in the playoffs was kind of a fluke.
I do think last year was kind of nuts. It's just, man, it's interesting. I don't want to turn this into the last half of the show entirely to Heat talk. I just want to say I'm so ready for the playoffs in the East specifically because just of how close those top six teams are to each other. I'm really, really excited for the playoffs. You know, usually you'd be lucky to get, you know, last year we were all looking forward to Brooklyn and Milwaukee and we were lucky we got it and the playoffs were good. But the intrigue this year in the East, I can't remember it being like this ever, you know, for the last 20 years. I don't remember them having this many good teams. So, man, I'm just really excited to see it play out. I'm ready. I wish we could fast forward to it.
You're ready. Do you have any other Miami Heat thoughts? I'm contemplating ending the show right now after that because I'm so stunned. We have a couple other questions, but they're so evergreen, and I might want to hold them because my brain is so frazzled right now.
Were not expecting that, huh?
No, that kind of came out of nowhere. I wasn't ready to talk about the Heat. They've been on my mind, of course, because I am going to watch that game tonight, I think, or at least the first half, and hopefully it'll be a blowout, but it won't because the Celtics stink.
Listen, like I said, this is the kind of game Boston should win easily. You know what I mean?
Please stop saying that. No excuse. Please just stop saying that. I don't like hearing it.
They've been a strange team. You mentioned that closing five. I do think that's the lineup they're going to have to win with. Like you said, mm-hmm. It hasn't played much. You just look at other teams around the league, the real contenders, in my opinion, like every team has that one lineup that's like a 12, 13, 14 net rating. They don't play it all the time, but they go to it when it's crunch time, when they need the win, when they need to pull it out. The great teams have that lineup. The Heat are expecting that five to be their lineup, but they haven't proven it to be that yet. A wild card in all of this, and I have truly not a single idea what to expect, is Victor Oladipo.
Mm-hmm.
Because if he's like 75% of All-Star Oladipo, and you can close with him, that to me, that is really a huge wild card for their season. I mean, we have no idea when he's going to be back, let alone, you know, what he's going to look like on the floor, but... Yeah, I just am a little... They've been so reliant on threes in a way that...
Specifically corner threes, which are harder to generate in the playoffs.
Exactly. And yeah, it's just going to be... It's going to be very interesting. And I do think that last year's series against the Bucks, not to get into bubble talk or whatever, but I think there were more kind of... last year's playoffs just had stranger results, I thought, than the bubble, frankly. Last season, I think, was just had so many more variables in it than the ones before. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, you know, the bubble is one big variable, but last year was players returning from COVID and empty arenas or full arenas and blah, blah, whatever. We don't need to litigate that. But my point is, as much as I am not necessarily worried about how that first round series went, against the Bucks went, there's something to be said about the way they defended Jimmy, the way they defended Bam, basically daring them to shoot from the mid-range, and the Heat, frankly, not able to capitalize. What's to say teams won't have success guarding the Heat like that again in the playoffs this year? And I do think Bam has not necessarily taken that offensive step we've expected him to take.
So once again, I'm shell-shocked, and I've decided as you were speaking that we're going to have to end today's episode on that note.
I think it's mostly because you're hungry. I think that's why we're ending the episode. I think it has more to do.
I'm not going to lie. I am. My stomach is growling right now. but I do think that everything you said, you know, having Kyle Lowry push the pace, having, older, better, like Tyler Hero was just not good last season. He was very disappointing. This year, he's potentially going to win Sixth Man of the Year. Duncan Robinson's coming around hitting threes. You have PJ Tucker knocking down every single corner three he takes and just providing that tenaciousness on defense that you need. Maybe Markieff Morris will bless us with his presence at some point down the
What
line.
A strange situation. Can I give you my top three Nancy Myers movies?
Sure, you may.
I'm going with It's Complicated, number one. Something's Gotta Give, number two. And The Holiday, number three.
Okay, another... Okay, I was also not expecting this. I was not prepared. I really wish I was. It's Complicated is
that's
is
Alec
a good
Baldwin,
movie.
Steve Martin. Yes. Yeah.
Meryl Streep. Yeah, yes. That's a good one. I do like that. Now you have me like on IMDb trying to scramble right now.
There's a scene in It's Complicated where Meryl Streep is rolling out croissant dough, and then she hangs it from her chin like she has like a wizard beard. Like, where else are we gonna get the god Meryl Streep just engaging in hijinks like that one?
People come to this podcast and look what they get. It's truly a miracle.
Yeah,
we're miracle workers. You're a miracle worker. Thank you so much, Rohan, for everything that you do. Go Celtics tonight. Good luck to you. Thank you, Shelby. Thank you to our listeners. Everybody, please keep the emails coming. They've been so good. We have like a few that we're supposed to get to today that we will hit soon that are just so terrific. So please add to that list at openfloormail@gmail.com. That's openfloormail@gmail.com. Everybody, please stay safe. Everybody, please continue to enjoy the NBA season.
How do people feel about getting Big Fitness Energy at Planet Fitness for $15 a month? They feel as thrilled as a kid the first summer they're tall enough to ride the roller coaster. That's right. When you join Planet Fitness right now, you get access to tons of equipment and free fitness training in a clean and spacious club. Don't wait. Join the judgment-free zone today for that all-day energy. Download the free Planet Fitness app and join today for $15 a month.
Hurry. Deal ends September 12th. Join today for $15 a month.
See Home Club for details.